You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The historic downtown district in Santa Ana in Orange County is known as a community gathering place, like this annual parade that celebrates Mexico's Independence Day. And all the shopping on nearby 4th Street, where Marcela Rodriguez runs a travel agency.
People used to come here, 4th Street. It was a big thing, 4th Street. We have customers coming from, like, San Diego. You can see all your people here. Every day was a fiesta.
But in an attempt to bring even more people downtown, these days the area sounds more like this. A two-block construction zone right in front of Rodriguez's business means she and her neighbors are paying the price for this effort to make downtown even better. And they're asking themselves, when the project is completed in 2 years, will any of them still be around to benefit? KCRW's Megan Jamerson headed to the heart of OC to find out.
On a regular old Thursday in January, Marcela Rodriguez was at the travel agency she's owned and operated in downtown Santa Ana for 30 years when a man wearing construction gear walked in.
And he came and said, you guys have a back door? And I said, no, why?
He asked if her customers could start using a back door to get into her storefront.
He said, oh, because we're going to be starting working here and you need, there's no way you're going to able to go into your business. And I'm like, what? Yeah, we're going to start on Monday, and this is a Thursday. And I'm like, are you guys kidding me?
The next week, his crew ripped up a two-block stretch of 4th Street, closing off the street to cars, blocking parking, and bringing noise and dust. This disruption is for a project called the OC Streetcar. It's the first of its kind in Orange County, a 4-mile electric train that will start in downtown Santa Ana and go north to the city of Garden Grove. The Santa Ana train is estimated to be up and running in 2024. And when it is, supporters of the project, like Santa Ana Mayor Vince Sarmiento, say it's a win-win for reducing traffic and emissions while also bringing more customers to the shopping district. He doesn't blame the Orange County Transit Authority, or OCTA, for the pain to local businesses.
I don't think there's any intentional effort by, you know, OCTA to harm. I think this is a byproduct of this being a project that we haven't done often.
And maybe because it's a first attempt, that explains all the complaints by business owners.
It's not just we're a bunch of complainers. The reality is really bad because we're not making any business because of this.
Of course, yes, it's unusual for a brick-and-mortar travel agency to still exist in 2022. But business was steady for Rodriguez before construction because she catered to older folks who still want in-person services for booking flights to places like Mexico and Central America.
Like when I started, I was young now. I'm aging with them. So even if I offer my service through internet, I know they're not going to buy from that way because they don't want to deal with that.
5 months since construction started, you can see the rail line taking shape in the street. But you can't drive up and park in front of Rodriguez's storefront. Her revenue has dropped 90%. And a month ago, she had to lay off her 2 employees.
And it's really sad. It's really embarrassing. You tell them, I don't have money to keep paying you.
An Orange County Transit Authority spokesperson wrote in an email to KCRW that they sympathize and, quote, understand that construction projects like this can be difficult. And here's what OCTA says they are doing to ease that difficulty. They gave $400,000 to the Downtown Business Improvement District to increase advertising for downtown. And then after complaints and a protest, the OCTA added hundreds of signs, including electronic marquees and sidewalk decals, providing walking and parking directions. They also updated their website with GoPro videos on how to get around downtown. That didn't work, local merchants say. Most businesses downtown are old school and advertise through word of mouth. So the business district started buying Spanish language newspaper and radio ads like this one.
Visita la calle 4 en Santa Ana para explorar todas las tiendas, restaurantes.
But business owners like Dana Jozeri say it's not enough because of the lasting damage done during the early weeks of the project. He says efforts to help businesses were mismanaged, like how it took several weeks to install signs in both English and Spanish to say businesses are open.
So, you know, ultimately, this we're guinea pigs. Just like their marketing, just like the signage, everything you saw in the community outreach, it's them figuring out what they should be doing after the fact.
Jozeri says his customers have given up coming to his pop culture gift shop, even though one lane of traffic reopened in June. So he worked out a deal with his landlord to stop paying his rent. Jozeri is among the business owners calling for the OCTA to look into creating their own business interruption fund. The transit authority would give cash payments to business owners. It's been done before. Los Angeles Metro has done that to help keep businesses open during the construction of the Crenshaw Expo line. But in Orange County, the transit authority said in an email to KCRW that after consulting with its legal counsel, that they were not, quote, authorized to provide direct financial support to local businesses through a business interruption fund, which would constitute a gift of public funds. Here's Mayor Sarmiento again.
I do see a bigger picture here, but this is our first venture out, so I understand there's going to be bumps. But it really is coming at the expense and on the backs of people that just can't afford it.
Now, the City of Santa Ana and the Orange County Board of Supervisors have pulled together just over $4 million to help the area's businesses pay rent. But is that enough? Back at Rodriguez's travel agency, it's very quiet. The phone hasn't rung once all morning, and no customers have walked in. Rodriguez applied for the city and county grants, and she's received $4,300 so far. She says she's extremely grateful, but that only covers 2.5 months' rent.
So, if you know a little math, you can see right there that I can survive like this if this gets much longer.
The street in front of her business is scheduled to reopen by Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, Rodriguez is spending days alone at her shop, waiting for her older customers to navigate a torn-up street to bring back their business. For KCRW, I'm Macon Jamerson.
Coming up on GLA, 4 decades of being out on film. LA's Outfest turns 40, and you know it. There's a party. Showtime on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. What began as a tiny local film festival in 1982 has grown to be a worldwide presence working to increase visibility and access for LGBTQ plus storytellers and audiences alike. I'm talking about Outfest, and it is back for its 40th year starting this week, premiering and showing dozens upon dozens of various length films in the genre. Damian Navarro is Outfest's executive director, and he's here to tell us what we can expect from this year's 10-day-long festival, which kicks off, by the way, tonight. Damian, welcome.
Thank you so much.
You began, obviously, as a film festival, but now you're offering so much more, right? Talk about some of the programming that you have and the stuff that people can catch this year.
It's been a really exciting year. You know, we've been hearing from the community how important inclusiveness is, of course, and we weren't wanting to say that, you know, we hadn't been paying attention. And I think what's exciting about this year is you have over 200 films, a good smattering of those from Los Angeles, shorts films by directors that are under 25, an incredible lineup of international films, and then all kinds of really fun summits and activities for people to participate in outside of just simple screenings. Most exciting, of course, we're back at the Ford Amphitheater for 3 nights, enjoying comedy with Margaret Cho and Kathy Griffin. We have Rosie O'Donnell and the new League of Their Own series, where Rosie's going to be leading a panel with Abby Jacobson and many of the other cast. Of course, we're inviting Todd Haynes and Julianne Moore for the 20th anniversary of Far From Heaven. It's just an incredible, incredible lineup.
What you guys do, though, at Outfest, and do it very well, is film. And one of the films premiering is Billy Porter's directorial debut called Anything's Possible. I want to play a bit of the trailer.
I hate when people say I'm brave. You're transitioning so young. I just want to tell you how brave you are.
It's not that brave if you're just being who you are.
This is a high school love story, which isn't all that different from, you know, your normal fare. What is different is that it's a trans love story, right? Tell me a little bit about it and why y'all chose it.
That's right. I mean, you know, if everybody remembers Jim Falls Trick back in the day, it really was the first time that there was a rom-com story, love story, in which so many queer men at the time were able to see themselves in a completely different light, playing a very different lead. And I like to say that Anything's Possible is that trick for this generation. It is a beautiful, fun, whimsical, bright, all of the things that you would hope Billy Porter's bringing to his directorial debut. It's a trans rom-com story in high school, set in high school, in which the girl gets the boy. And the only drama is that her friend wanted the boy. And how touching and beautiful is that for so many generations now to be able to see something as simple as that? And we look back to, of course, some of the most famous rom-coms in the past and how much those undeniably still sit within our quick memory, and that we each have been able to see ourselves reflected. And I think that's what this one's going to bring. It's going to really bring it home for everyone.
Let's talk about another film that's showing, and it's called Mama Bears. Let's listen to some of that as well.
A Midwest mom sparked an idea, offer a hug to anyone. It took off.
That is my girl. And the fact that she is gay has no bearing on my love for her.
This is obviously a movie about religion and how it affects people and the hurt and the love and the anger. And there are so many emotions when you watch something like that. Tell us a little bit about Mama Bears.
When you see this incredibly touching documentary in which these Christian women have forgone everything that they thought they had learned and their beliefs and have embraced their queer children, I think people are just going to really see these are the types of movies that build bridges and bring us back together to support one another, especially in these times where so many of our rights, of course, are under target.
I'm curious as what, you know, what middle age, you guys are 40 years old. What does middle age feel like for Outfest? I mean, are y'all getting, you know, I mean, like me, a little gray and just growing a little more distinguished, unlike me? Or what are you looking forward to in the next 40 years?
Well, you know, in gay years, you never know what 40 really represents. but we're looking pretty cute.
It's an eternity, Damien. You know? It's an eternity.
We might have gotten a little Botox along the way, but you know, I look at what's sold out almost immediately, and knowing that the short film series for directors under 25 really just warmed my heart that there is an entirely new young generation that is discovering Outfest. You know, we have we're honoring Big Frida and Clive Barker at our Platinum series, and showing Nightbreed and partying it up at the Alchemy Party with Big Frida, and just to see the type of energy that's building around some of these programs that were specifically, of course, built to respond to what youth and young people are really looking for today. So I like to think of ourselves as the cool one instead of the one that, you know, with the Ray-Bans running down, you know, Malibu in our convertible.
And movies are, you know, those are the portals, right, where people can dream. I was thinking about, you know, the fact that everything was pushed online for such a long time with the pandemic, and now you guys are still online. Right. And for the people who don't have the opportunity to get to L.A. or New York or Chicago, to get to, you know, to see life and dream life the way you want it to be.
That's exactly right. I think one of the stories that was just so touching was how many people from rural America and in cities all across that, you know, have never had the benefit of having any kind of queer festival or any kind of thematic festival in which they were able to go out and see themselves on the larger screen. And in a world in which we feel like we are everywhere, we all know that the AIs really keep, you know, the type of content that we hope people would see off of their set-top boxes. And so to see people, like, I remember my favorite story was there was an 80-plus-year-old widowed man who had been married to a woman his whole entire life and had been closeted. And he came across Outfest, the virtual pass, and was able to watch for the first time himself on screen. And we've just heard of thousands of stories over the last couple of years as we've gone virtual of exactly the same thing. So we really hope that it's a transformative moment for the industry.
Well, you can go to outfestla.org to find all the stuff happening at the festival this year, to see the in-person stuff too, and a premiere tonight. Damian Navarro, Executive Director of Outfest, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Straight ahead on GLA, getting wine to market is tough. If you're a small winemaker, really tough. One LA firm wants to help. We're going to go there next. More of Greater LA now on KCRW. Steve Chiatakis here. And I don't know about you, but when the temperature is hot and the world is off, and yeah, the world is off, there is nothing, nothing like the spirit of a refreshing, cool glass of fruit.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things.
Wine. There's no shortage of it here in California, at least that we can tell. But what there is a shortage of are winemakers with access to the marketplace. Well, a new SoCal-based wine venture is dedicated to expanding the collective wine horizon by highlighting grape varietals and growing regions and wine blends that you probably haven't heard of before, and telling the stories of those winemakers that create them. Rose Previtt founded the company Go There Wines with her husband, David Green. She is with us right now. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Maybe better with a glass of wine. We'll see. But we also have winemaker Tara Gomez with us to talk about how difficult it can be to get that wine to market. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Tara, I do want to start with you. How hard is it for a small winemaker to get the product into stores and into homes? I mean, you're worried about growing grapes and the process and all that stuff, but oftentimes getting it distributed is a really high threshold, right?
Yes, it is, especially as a small producer as well. I mean, we're very small, about 1,000 case production. And yeah, it's just challenging. You're competing with all the thousands of labels that are already out in the marketplace. And, you know, it costs money to do all the marketing and everything else. And so it's literally just my wife and I, Mireya Taribo, and myself. And yeah, we started this project for Caminos de Dreams.
You're not from too far away, right? You spent your youth traversing California's Central Coast and the wine country with your parents. Tell me about how you got into wine.
Well, how I got into wine, it was the love of science that kind of led me in this direction. So at a very early age, actually, I was 4 years old when my parents got me my first microscope set. And I just loved looking at nature through a microscope. And then from there, it grew into chemistry sets. And then my parents used to go traveling up and down the Central Coast wine tasting. It was the chemistry side of it that connected me to wanting to become a winemaker. And from there, it's like I knew in grade school that that was my calling. That was the direction that I wanted to go.
That is so cool. And in 2010, you founded, is it Kita Wines? Kita?
Yes, Kita Wines with my Chumash tribe. So we're from the San Ynez Band of Chumash Indians. And it all began with the purchase of the Camp 4 property. And just being here in wine country, to me, it just made perfect sense to want to go and to want to get into the industry.
It's an industry, by the way, that's dominated by a lot of white men, right? And you are,
yes,
you are neither.
It sure is. It's a male-dominated industry, and on top of that, it's a male-dominated white industry. And so, yeah, there's challenges that we face alongside of that as well. And women only make up a very small percentage. And then you add the BIPOC owners to that, it's even smaller. And then LGBTQ, yeah. The percentages just get even smaller.
Rose Previtt, when you hear a story like Tara's and see and witness other stories like that, I mean, is that what got you into this business in the first place? I mean, what kind of a, obviously it's been a problem, but I mean, it's really difficult, right, to get into the wine business.
Oh yeah, no, it's okay. We think it's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's yeah, it's absolutely what we're working to change. But I actually kind of came to know that there was, you know, this problem in the industry back in 2009 when my husband and I lived in Moscow, Russia. And we discovered the Republic of Georgia while living in Russia. There's some people that I think, you know, aren't as familiar with Georgia, but it's a border country to Russia. And we heard within the first few days of moving there, the best wine you can buy and the cheapest wine you can buy in Russia is Georgian wine. And we kept hearing about it like a mythical thing, because it turns out the whole time we were living there that the wine was embargoed. After a skirmish a few years earlier, the Russians had decided to punish the Georgians by stopping the import of their wine. And at the time, Georgia was mainly only exporting to them. So it was crushing to their industry, crushing to farmers and small wine producers who have been producing wine for, wait for it, this is true, 8,000 years. But most of the world doesn't even know that. You know, wine can be geopolitical. It can be used by one big country to punish one small country. But as I got into the purchasing, I realized there's a lot of other countries that are kind of lesser known in the American market that are actually super high quality, delicious wines with amazing winemakers who have amazing history and phenomenal stories, but the American market never hears it.
You guys have a profit sharing model that gives a quarter of the profits back to the winemakers. Talk a little bit about that.
The profit sharing model is intended to really find out what the hopes and dreams of our partners are. And of course, they're making money on the sale of the wine. We go ahead, we purchase the wine up front so they know it's a guaranteed sale. Once the wine is sold, we are going to distribute 25% of it to all of our partners. This year, there's four different countries represented. And what we're trying to do is just talk to them about where the money goes. What are your hopes and dreams? What would extra income help you do? And I don't know if Tara wants to, you know, add what she's hoping to do with it. But that's kind of that's the dream for the company and our biggest intention.
Tara, what would you like to do with it? And talk a little bit about, before we let you guys go, this new model for, you know, to get more growers and vintners and even wine consumers into the world of wine.
Yeah, well, it's really generous of them, and it's also too really helpful for us as small producers. I mean, really, like, you have to pay for the grapes up front. With that upfront money, it helps pay for grapes, and it also helps us dream a little bit, because the next dream of ours is to be able to have a piece of land that we could lease and grow our own grapes on and produce off of the land that you know, that we plan to take great care of.
A lot of good wine, and obviously the best part about it is dreams. Hopefully dreams coming true going forward. I want to thank you both for coming on and talking to us. Tara Gomez, a winemaker here in California. Rose Previtt, founder of Go There Wines, based here in LA. Thanks to you both for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, an unlikely TikTok star at the Huntington Gardens, a succulent gardener named Faustino. They call him Tio Faustino. Gives some gardening tips. En Español, who is he? You're going to meet him next week on GLA. Those stories and many others as well. Visit the website anytime, by the way, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing by sharing your thoughts with us. Give us some story ideas. And you can subscribe to the podcast, too. Why, yes, we are a podcast. You can listen anytime, not just at 2:30 and 6, any time of the day at kcrw.com/GLA and subscribe to the podcast. You don't even have to ask for it. It just drops. It's there on the regular. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's episode possible. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your time and attention, and, of course, those ears. Have yourself a great evening.